You know, Latimer, with all of space-time available to us, it's quite hard to settle upon a location and time to take tea.
May I suggest ancient Egypt, ma'am? The weather is most clement, and I understand you have a fondness for the architecture.
That is a long time ago, though. I don't think I'm quite ready to be that adventurous.
If the remit is not too adventurous, I suppose one has to rule out pre-industrial revolution, anything off-world, Devon, the future, the alleyway behind...
The future! Oh, no, don't rule that out. I like the sound of that. But not too far ahead.
100 years, ma'am?
Perfect. Somewhere not too scary.
London, ma'am?
Yes, London, 100 years into the future. They should still have tea there, right, Latimer?
Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman.
There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Hello, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and haven't just discovered that you've been quoting your favourite film incorrectly for the past 10 years. I'm Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea there for polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. I hope you don't mind the short walk from the location of the time bubble to these sweet Covent Garden tea rooms. At least we didn't have to wear disguises, as Latimer rightly commented that no one bats an eyelid at what one wears in London. I must confess, I was rather sad to see how grimy and run down Covent Garden is, 100 years from the place I know and love. Perhaps it has fallen out of fashion. I also thought there would be more people. And traffic. Well, hopefully it's because transport problems are a thing of the past. At least these tea rooms are clean, and the linen tablecloths are fresh. In fact, it feels like somewhere from the 19th century, rather than the future.
I'm sorry to disturb you, ma'am, but your guest has arrived, a Miss Seanan Maguire.
Oh, marvellous. Let's see her calling card. Miss Seanan Maguire, composer of fables, complicator of situations, and presumptive heir to the Great Western Pumpkin Patch.
Ah, the Western one. How interesting.
Is it very different to the Eastern one?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Show her in, Latimer. For those of you who don't know, Seanan Maguire writes urban fantasy novels and horror novels under the pseudonym Myra Grant. Seanan was the winner of the 2010 John W. Campbell Award for Best New Writer and is one of the lovelies on the SF Squeecast.
Miss Maguire, ma'am.
Seanan, it's a delight to see you. Please do come and sit down.
All right.
How are you?
I'm doing quite well. And yourself?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good, thank you. Would you like a cup of tea?
That would be excellent. I've brought the cat. Could I get one for her as well?
Your cat takes tea?
Actually, my cat takes anything fluid that's served to her in a cup. It's quite fascinating. She drank an entire mug of Kool-Aid one day when we weren't looking. So something nice and mint with no sugar would be wonderful for her.
I can do that. I can do mint tea for the cat, if only to see Latimer's expression when I put the cup down in front of the cat. That would be priceless. How do you take your tea?
Generally, I take a cup of milk, thank you.
Okay. And I was wondering if you'd like to have some shortbread with that.
Shortbread would be fantastic. None for the cat. I'll have hers.
Okay, that's fine. So, in your invitation, I invited you to bring a curio. Am I to understand that your cat is your curio?
Yes, this is Alice. Alice is a blue classic tabby and white Maine Coon, which is why she's quite so large. She weighs 26 pounds and is not considered overweight by my veterinarian. And the reason that I've brought her along is that everything else I tried to position for our little visit today turned out to be fragile when swatted off a shelf by a 26-pound Maine Coon. So there's quite a lot of broken porcelain for me to clean up when I get home.
Yes, I've seen the videos online. I'd love to have a cat, but I'm horribly allergic to them. But thankfully, I took some medication before I came today. I'm very pleased. You never know when you're travelling through time what might be around. So it's good to not sneeze in the middle of taking tea with someone. It'd be very, very rude.
Though it'd be fascinating to find out if the early feathered dinosaurs would trigger your allergies.
Yes, though I think not today.
Not today.
Not today. I think 100 years in the future is a nice gentle start to more adventurous time exploration. I was reading your bio online, and it says that you've never lost a game of Who Here Was Bitten by the Strangest Thing. So the first thing I have to ask you is, what is the strangest thing that has ever bitten you?
That's very hard to answer, because everyone sort of has their own definition for what constitutes strange. I think the strangest thing that's ever bitten me was Catherine Valenti, because she was very odd at the time. But most people think the king cobra is a bit stranger to have been bitten by then Cat. And he's very dear. His name is Claude. It wasn't his fault. He'd been dropped. It's not polite to drop a cobra.
He bit you?
He bit me.
Is he your cobra or somebody else?
Oh, no. I don't keep venomous reptiles in the house. But, no, I was doing a university course on handling venomous reptiles, and we were transporting Claude, several of us, from one location to another, and the boy that had the middle part of the snake flunked out of the course. And he dropped his part of Claude, and the snake basically was pulled out of our hands by gravity. Gravity sort of kicked in and said, I think I would like this cobra to be on the floor now. And we found that we had now dropped a 12-foot king cobra on a tile floor, which was very upsetting for him. He was not accustomed to that sort of treatment. He didn't appreciate it. And he showed us that he didn't appreciate it by rearing up, as they'll do. Have you ever had a king cobra rear at you?
No, I can't say I have. I mean, the closest I've come to that is Raiders of the Lost Ark. I don't even know if that was a king cobra.
No, that was a spitting cobra. Oh. If you look carefully, you can see the venom beating on the piece of plexiglass that they've
yes.
put between the snake and Indy. A king, they can lift two-thirds of their body straight up off the ground if they're very ticked off. So a 12-foot snake, that is 8 feet or so of cobra that is now looking you in the eye.
Oh, my God.
It's a bit startling.
Goodness.
Yes, it was not the most sanitary experience I've ever had. I did require new trousers. I think everyone did. And he was fenting at us, as a snake will do when it's angry. And we had made him very angry. I don't blame Claude in any way for what happened. It wasn't his fault. But he was fenting at us. And at that height, he could easily have bitten someone in the face. So when he fented at me, I put my arm up to protect my face, and I put it up a little too fast, and I startled him. And so he latched on to my arm.
Oh, my God!
And cobras they're not strike-release snakes. If you get bitten by a rattlesnake, which I recommend against, but if you get bitten by a rattlesnake or an asp, they'll bite you and then they'll let go and draw back like they're getting ready for another strike. And there's a chance, it's not a huge chance, but there's a chance that you'll get what's called a dry bite, where they'll just give you a warning bite but not inject any venom into you, because they can't eat you. You are useless to them.
Uh-huh.
So they're sort of trying to scare you off. They're like, you can go away, shoo. Cobras... No. Cobras, if they have had to waste the energy on biting you, they would really like you never to be bitten again. Therefore, you must be thoroughly envenomated so that you will die. And they latch on and they chew.
Oh,
they literally will gnaw on whatever they have managed to hit.
Oh, God.
So, having latched onto my arm, Claude proceeded to start chewing on me. And so I'm standing there with this cobra hanging off my left arm, and the cobra is going, gnaw, 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 gnaw. And one of my classmates had gone to get our professor, and one of my classmates produced a camera. And mind you, this was before cell phones. You know, this was before everyone had a camera with them all the time, which means that someone I was in university with looked at me, looked at the fact that I had a large venomous reptile hanging off my arm, and thought, I should get a picture. That's the best possible use of my time. So one of my classmates took a picture of me with this cobra hanging off my arm, and it was hanging in the university's life sciences building for years with a label that said, "Reptile Safety, Shannon's doing it wrong." And eventually my professor came in and they got clawed off my arm and they pumped me full of anti-venom and I woke up in the hospital 3 days later.
Well, let me have a sip of tea because I have been rendered speechless. Goodness me. I'm very glad that we have tea to hand because, well, goodness, if I'd been standing up somewhere outdoors and public, I might well have swooned. That is just the most remarkable story I've ever heard. And did you go back after that and continue to handle?
I want to finish the course.
Wow. And is there an impressive scar?
Not really. I've got little white dots. I mean, it was quite a while ago. It's when I was in university. So I've got little white dots I can show you here on my arm. And that's where the teeth went in.
Oh, yes.
But most of the scarring faded out a long time ago. I have to really show them to you and explain what they are. Most people, interestingly, take them for chickenpox scars.
This is nowhere near, is it?
Oh, no, yeah. Not really.
Wow. Well, I wasn't expecting that. I'm just going to have a little morsel of shortbread. I can't actually get rid of the image of you being bitten by a cobra out of my head. That is the most remarkable thing. Anyway, now, moving from being bitten by a huge cobra to filking, obviously.
That's a very easy transition.
Have you sung about being bitten by a cobra?
No. People get a little shirty when you're like, "I'm now going to sing the ballad of the giant venomous snake."
Oh, I would like to hear that, actually. That's a shame. So what I wanted to ask about filking is, as a filking virgin, where should I start? I know nothing about the world of filking. I've seen it on programs, at conventions, and things have conspired so that I've never managed to get to things at the right time. Is it something which is best to kind of go into a room at the back and sit and listen for a while, or is it best to sample things online? What would you recommend?
I would recommend whatever makes you feel comfortable. Filk is, it's the folk music of science fiction. And so you have a lot of parodies, you have a lot of things that are sort of like Weird Al Yankovic and that sort of bit. And you have really serious, really beautiful, anthemic music. Did you watch the Hugo live stream last year from Worldcon?
Well, I was there.
You were there. Yeah. And you're not a fucking virgin. Leslie Fish, who sang during the role of those that we had lost in the last year, she's a very famous filker.
Ah, that was very beautiful, actually. I did really enjoy that.
Yeah, I actually, I hope that they'll keep doing that. Because I love that we have that listing of people that we've lost from the community and from the world of science fiction. But the one year I had a friend that had passed away who was a convention volunteer and not very many people knew them in the region where the Worldcon was. And so there wasn't much applause for my friend's name. And it's not applause of, yay, this person's dead. It's we're acknowledging. So it made me feel kind of awkward when some names had this obvious outpouring of grief and then other names that were people that were legitimately cared about and loved and would be missed, everyone's just like silent or, I don't know them. Mm-hmm. But having the music was this beautiful way to keep everyone connected and to keep it from seeming like we were celebrating certain people's lives more than others. It felt very unifying to me. So I really, really hope that Worldcon will continue to do that. But that is completely off topic. So you have heard some Filk. That's Leslie. She's splendid. You're out in the United Kingdom when we were not traveling through time having tea with random guests. So you've got some amazing Filkers out where you are. There's a yearly Filk convention, and there's going to be a lot of Filk at LawnCon in London. My friend Anna Raftery is organizing the track, and I really recommend coming out for the Worldcon Filk track because you'll have some just remarkable folks there. But going online is great because it lets you kind of sample Filk from around the country and around the world and get an idea of what you'd like to hear more of so that you can seek it out.
Hmm. Yeah, I'll definitely check that out at LunCon. That sounds like a good thing. And I agree with the way that they did that part of the Hugo ceremony. I get quite teary-eyed
with
that. I think it's very beautiful. And seeing the names go by, and, yeah, it makes you feel there's something so much bigger Sorry, did you just hear something then?
It's probably the cat.
No. Oh, yes, probably the cat. So, my next question. If you were queen for the day, who would be the first person to be beheaded?
Which country am I getting to be queen of?
Oh, the world. Of course.
I'm queen of the world.
Yeah, for a day.
Then the first person to be beheaded would be whomever could make it only be for a day.
That's scary.
I'm beheading my replacement.
Okay, so after you've beheaded them, is there anyone else who would be next? Or would you be a benevolent queen?
Oh, I wouldn't be benevolent at all, but I would be unbenevolent in large, sweeping ways. The reforms to the American tax system alone would just be terrifying and upsetting.
Is there anyone who you would knight?
Knightings? Well, what do you get to do? I suppose I'd be determining what you got to do as a knight.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, yeah, there's quite a few folks that would be knighted, but they'd all have sort of, it'd be less like knighting and more like musing. You know, you had the muse of history and the muse of depressing poetry and the muse of cream pies and all of that. And so it'd be my friend Brooke, who is a pharmacist, would now be the muse of vaccinations. And she'd just get to go around vaccinating people. That's what she'd do.
Cool.
All the time. Are you within the risk range for the flu? Congratulations, you're getting a flu shot. And I know she would be fair about it, because she does work with immunocompromised populations, so she wouldn't force people for whom it would be a health hazard. But all this anti-vaccination rumbling would end really quickly when Brooke appeared with the stabby stick.
Bravo. That sounds great.
Oh, dear.
Is something wrong, Latimer?
No, Mum.
Hmm. When I invite somebody to tea, I go onto the Twitters and ask my friends there if there's anything that they would like to ask. My guest, a very nice chap, asked why the obsession with Disneyland.
Have you ever been to a Disney park?
I haven't. I may well be in the next few years. I have a little boy who's 6 years old and is definitely within that range.
Well, for one thing, the range is everyone.
I think he was too young before. I think he would have just been totally overwhelmed. I think he's just getting old enough to enjoy it.
Almost certainly. Yes, absolutely. I think it is possible to be too young to have fun, too young to understand that you shouldn't spoil other people's fun.
Mm.
But now that he's hit the range, he'll be there till, you know, the end of his life. So why Disneyland? Why any of the Disney parks? Disney is interesting because you've sort of got the entertainment arm, which does the movies and makes all those decisions, and then you have the parks, and their job is to make Disneyland and Disney World and all of the Disney parks the one place you want to be. That's all that they focus on. And the way that they try to accomplish this is through a thing they call Disney Magic and through the four pillars of Disney Courtesy.
Okay.
Which are safety, is everyone safe? Is everything okay? Courtesy, once I know that you are safe, I can be polite to you. So I don't let you juggle knives in front of an open flame. But if you're standing at a safe distance and have replaced the knives with balls, then I can applaud and compliment you on your juggling form. Efficiency, once everyone is safe and everyone is being treated courteously, now we can move on to trying to make sure things move in a quick and efficient fashion. And then show, which is putting on a show and making things flashy and fun and memorable.
Mm-hmm.
And what they call in Disney parlance, you know, creating memories. We're here to make memories. And what this all does as a corporate policy, as a way of living, is it creates an environment where you get to feel like you are one of the most special people in the world. Even as you know that the folks that you're dealing with are an assembly line of magic. You know, they deal with 100 people every day. You're not the only one that they're going to do this for. You're not the only one they're going to be nice to. It doesn't matter. That's not the feeling that you come away with. You come away with this feeling of magic is real. Everything can still be magical. Everything can still be great. It is a very controlled environment. When something goes wrong, they are right on the ball to clean it up, take care of it, fix it, make your experience better. And the end result, I have obsessive compulsive disorder, and I do talk about that. It's not a secret. But I get very stressed out in certain social situations because I don't know how to respond. I don't know how to deal with what's going on. And people get very stressed out if they realize that I'm stressed out, and it becomes a horrible loop. in a Disney park, there's none of that. All I need to worry about is, can I get in line for the Haunted Mansion? You know, can I do this thing? And I know that the cast will take care of me, and if I tell them that what I need is a dark room to sit in for 5 minutes, they'll provide it. They are absolutely all about giving you that experience that makes you want to come back.
Wow.
I was a little kid when Disney World was first being advertised on the Disney Channel, and we had the Disney Channel in our home because I have two little sisters, and so my mom paid the extra $10 a month to get it into our apartment for us, even though $10 was a really big deal when I was a kid. And I was enchanted by the idea of Disney World. I was just enthralled, and I said, you know, can we go? And my mother looked at me and said, no, we can't. Disney World is only for the rich people, and we are never going to go there. And she was trying to be fair. She was trying to make sure I didn't pin my heart on something I could never have. Mm. But I was very upset by the idea that Disney would make a thing that was only for rich people, that Walt would have ever approved of that. So I told her, I'm taking you to Disney World. Someday I'm going to be rich enough that I can take you to Disney World. That was with a child's idea of what rich is and isn't. And Disney World isn't just for rich people. I mean, it's an expensive place, but if you go at the right time of year and you save and you do all of that, it's doable. Not for everyone, but unfortunately nothing is doable for everyone, not even eating every day. And so two Christmases ago, I took my mother and my youngest sister and my best friend, and we went to Disney World for a week. And I thought I'd killed my mom, actually. I thought she was just going to have a heart attack and drop dead when she saw Cinderella's castle. She turned the most amazing color and started hyperventilating and crying at the same time.
Oh.
And she hugged the mayor of Main Street until he looked kind of alarmed. And I really did think I had killed her. It's funny now, but at the time I was very concerned, like, oh, God. And when I asked my best friend, you know, will you come with me? Is this a thing I can get you to do so it's not just me and my family, because I'd like to not kill them? She said, okay, but I'm not sure I'm going to have any fun at Disney. I haven't been to a Disney park since I was a kid, and it's kind of a kid's thing, don't you think? But I'll go for you because I love you. And I went, well, I know you're wrong, so I'll take you anyway. And by the end of it, she was crying because we had to leave.
Oh, wow.
That's, you know.
Yeah, that sounds powerful.
It is. It's a very powerful place. And the parks are so good about making sure that Disney magic gets to be for absolutely everyone.
It's interesting you talking about the feeling of being safe there, because I had a conversation with my best friend last year. We were staying at a hotel in London for an event, and it was one of these chain hotels where it's exactly the same everywhere you go, anywhere in the world, you know, one of these kind of budget things, and they're all over the UK. And she was saying that she saw this thing on the TV where it was somebody who owned a boutique kind of bed and breakfast, and they were bemoaning the fact that there are these chain things all over the world and everyone just wants the same thing. And I was saying to her, but she obviously doesn't have to live with anxiety. Mm. And the fact that we could go and stay in the hotel, because both my best friend and I, we both suffer from anxiety, which gets severe at times. And just knowing exactly what is going to be there and what the room is going to look like and what they will provide and what they won't provide removes such an immense amount of stress that you can actually travel. And that's a good thing. Whereas if you go to these boutique places, it's great for some people, but not for everybody. And it's not that, you know, we don't want to be adventurous. It's that just, you know, really simple everyday things just get a little bit too much sometimes. And having all of those unknown variables removed is exactly what we want. And I can see the appeal of having not only the sense of familiarity, but knowing that safety and that what you hope will be there will be there could be so appealing. I want to go to Disney World now.
You should. You should do. Disney World's very popular with international travelers. And with the pound against the dollar right now, this is a great time to go to Disney World.
There was something else that someone asked on Twitter, actually. They said that you said something about a UK deal for Encrypteds some time ago, and they wanted to have some an update on that because they're very excited and they want to be able to shout about it everywhere.
I've released all of the news. I find it a little frustrating that we have so many social media platforms these days. Everyone wants all the news on their preferred social media platform.
So at the time that they're on.
Yeah, I'll make announcements on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, and the announcements are always, go to my webpage. That's where information lives. But no one ever wants to go there. It's like they think it's full of cobras. It's not, I promise. But both Encrypted and the October Day books have been acquired for United Kingdom publication by Corsair, which is the science fiction publishing branch of Constable and Robinson. And I believe... I'm not 100% sure, but I believe that the plan is going to have the first Encrypted books out this year.
Cool. That's the same imprint that has got the Glamorist Histories by Mary Robinette Coyle, isn't it, Corsair? The UK edition, I think.
I think so. And that it's also Catherine Valenti's UK publisher, which is fantastic because Kat is a very dear friend of mine, and it's so nice to be like, we finally have the same publisher! Yay! April. April of this year is going to be Discount Armageddon, which is the first of the Encrypted books. It's been available in the U.S. for a while now, and then they're publishing, they're bringing out Midnight Blue Light this same year, which is the second of them. Do you have Blue Light specials?
It's not something I'm familiar with. Blue Light Specials.
Yeah, I think it's an American thing. So I'm a little like, you maybe should have changed the title on that one. But that's all right. The really exciting thing, though, is that having these out means you'll be able to get ebooks in England and Scotland and all. And I'm so happy about that because I really like it when people actually buy the ebooks rather than downloading them off the internet because they can't get them in their region. Then I can feed the cats. And as you can see from Alice here, she's not actually the largest of my cats.
Wow.
Yeah. So they'll eat me if I don't feed them.
Yeah. I can see that being a problem. How is Alice around chickens?
She's never been around chickens.
Well, you see, I have some chickens that we usually have kind of just wandering around and pecking and, you know, just bodding about whilst we take tea. But I think Latimer was very wise in saying that perhaps the chickens should be put away because of the cat. But I wondered if we maybe just brought them in their little carry case and put them in the corner. Do you think that Alice would be able to manage?
I think she'd be fine.
Oh, good, okay. Yes, Latimer, could we bring them in, please? I've got quite attached to these rather strange chickens. They were sent as a gift. They have a little bit of a party trick, and it worked for Melinda, and it worked for Lieutenant Cole, who I took tea with a couple of weeks ago, and I think if they do this for the third time, then we definitely have magical chickens. So what I wanted to ask you is that if you could pick a theme tune, what would it be?
A theme tune for myself. Oh, that's difficult. What sort of show are we doing?
Well, whatever expresses your life.
Something like that. Then probably the entre-act from Little Shop of Horrors, from Act 2. It's got all these big horns in it. And it just sounds like something's coming to eat you.
Which, considering the Cobra story, is kind of true.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Let's see. Oh, yes.
Oh my God.
Isn't it amazing? Isn't it utter shit?
What do you feed these chickens?
They have all sorts of things. They do like cake, actually. They do have a go at the crumbs from the cake when we take tea, and corn and these funny little kind of kibble things we found at the shop. They're very versatile, really.
Yes. Well, Alice appears to think that they're a new form of iPod, so that'll work out well. Oh my gosh, chickens.
Yeah, I'm quite fond of them. I haven't named them yet, though. I can't settle upon a name for a pair of musical chickens. It'll come to me.
Chickens.
I think Lieutenant Cole said that it was the strangest thing he had ever done in his 40 years on this earth, which I took as a compliment, actually.
Yes, that is probably very complimentary.
Well, let me check the teapot. Oh, we're coming to the end of the tea, and shortbread is now just crumbs, and I think it's probably time to return to our everyday lives back in the 21st century. That sounds still very futuristic to me, though.
It does. Buck Rogers has us all sensitized to think of that as the future. And it's a good future.
It is. You know, I'm very much enjoying living in the 21st century. And by the look of things here in London, I mean, it's a bit quiet and, well, very quiet. I thought it would be busier, but perhaps 100 years in the future, London has fallen out of favour and there are other places more interesting to be than Covent Garden on a Sunday evening. I don't know. I'm quite surprised. But, you know, it still looks more or less the same, doesn't it?
Well, we're only 100 years in the future, right?
Yeah.
Are we exactly 100 years?
Yes, exactly 100 years.
Did you check the TV listings? Maybe the Doctor Who 150th is tonight.
Oh, my God, yes, that's probably what it is, isn't it? Latimer wouldn't have checked that. He wouldn't have thought about that, so...
It's all fine.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Well, it's just been such a delight to have you as a guest. And honestly, that Cobra story, I'm not going to be able to stop thinking about that for about 5 days.
I'll show you, I'll see if I can find a copy of the picture before long gone.
Oh, I would love to see that. That would be great. It's just, I thought I had a good university experience story regarding a cockroach, but you know, I'm not even going to bother telling people that now. I'm going to tell everybody your story instead. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Good. I'll obviously credit you and say, you know, it wasn't me. So, Latimer will show you the way out, and we will see each other again in London,
yes,
100 years ago from now. But in our future, I get horribly confused with these things. But in August, in 2014.
In August.
Marvelous.
See you there. Thank you for having us. Come on, Alice.
It's been a delight. Take care now. Bye.
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 You may wish to take this scythe with you, Mum.
So, you've been raiding my garage?
No, not at all, Mum. I actually borrowed it from you. From your future self. Although that is in the past, relative to here and now. You'll be glad to have it, I can assure you.
Thank you very much for your thoughtfulness and confusingness.
Latimer, why did you shut the door?
We shouldn't cross the square with Miss McGuire, Mum.
Why ever not?
It didn't go so well for us last time, Mum. Or rather, you.
Last time?
I wrote a note to myself, Mum. I found it whilst you were taking tea. It detailed what befell us outside. It was very graphic. It explained that I survived, realised Miss McGuire would need her scythe, and cautioned me to keep you indoors, and under no circumstances should you be permitted to leave with your guest.
But the time bubble is over there. How will we get home?
At the correct moment, the time bubble will be relocated to just behind the tea rooms.
So, am I to understand that I met with some terrible end?
Yes, Mum.
So why didn't you tell Shaunan? She must be in danger now.
Only mild peril, Mum. I refrained from telling her because she enjoyed it so, even when she only had a butter knife to hand.
Enjoyed what?
The reaping, Mum.
Oh my God, there are zombies! So that's why it was so quiet. And to think we thought it was because everyone was watching the 150th anniversary of Doctor Who. It wasn't that at all. There's been an apocalypse.
I'm afraid so, Mum.
Shaunan is remarkably good with that scythe.
Indeed, Mum. I understand it was made for her. Literally.
It's as if she knew there would be a time when she'd need one for killing zombies. Admirable forward planning.
By my calculations, Miss McGuire is averaging 10.5 decapitations per minute.
How many limbs?
Too many to count, Mum, especially with her upward thrust. They are hard to keep track of, flying through the air like that.
I feel a little bit squiffy.
Understandable, Mum.
Do you know what started off the zombie apocalypse?
It's difficult to say, as there were numerous factors. From what I've been able to piece together, it was a combination of political interference in the education system, the systematic dismantling of the NHS, manipulation by the mass media controlled by right-wing men, and a worldwide shortage of cherry bakewells.
That's terrible.
Yes, Mum. First they came for the scones, and then...
Shaunan's almost at the church.
Perhaps we should be on our way too, Mum.
Wait, Latimer, don't forget the chickens.
Oh, yes, Mum.
Well, as Latimer gets the crate and Shaunan dispatches the last rotters, I'd like to thank you for joining myself and the remarkable Shaunan the Slayer McGuire for tea today. Now we all know who we want to be with when the apocalypse comes. Recently, I received an email containing a list of people the sender would like to hear on the show. I thought it might be pleasant to ask all of you, dear listeners, to let me know who you would most like to be invited into the secret tea there and why. Simply pop your thoughts into the comments on www.tandjeopardy.com and I will diligently take notes. And if you're listening, Mr. Hiddleston or Mr. Mieville, you're welcome any time. Well, until next time, my special snowflakes. Latimer, do you think that we could pinpoint a time and place that would enable us to prevent the zombie apocalypse?
We could, ma'am, but that would be decidedly adventurous.
Yes, it would. But needs must and all that. Make a flask of tea, Latimer, and don't spare the biscuits.
Very good, ma'am.
You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman. Go to www.tandjeopardy.com to find out more and join in.